Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Let's scan the media landscape now. There's a lot going on. The Justice Department says it will jam up AT&T's $85 billion proposed buyout of Time Warner unless it gives up some assets like, say, Turner Broadcasting, which includes CNN, the president's least favorite channel. So is this political payback? There's also news in the Harvey Weinstein sexual harassment saga. NPR has its own harassment saga. Disney tried to ban reporters from a screening. So let's spend a few minutes with NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. Hi, David.
Hey, Robin.
So the suspicion has been that President Trump is not a fan of CNN, so the DOJ will punish CNN in this deal. We want to talk more about the political questions, but aren't there consumer groups opposing this deal because it's giant? Tell us more about it.
Right. This deal would tie up AT&T with Time Warner. So you have it's called in the field vertical integration. You have the platforms on which people consume a lot of content. If you think of mobile phones or of DirecTV, the satellite TV arm and giant that AT&T owns. And then you have Time Warner creates all this content. It's got HBO. It's got Turner Broadcast, includes CNN, Cartoon Network, TBS, TNT, every other channel you'd think that provides a Law and Order you might think on cable. and, of course, CNN primary among that, as well as Warner Brothers Studios and the like. And so they're saying, look, this is a way we can funnel content through the pipes that AT&T offers. Comcast did much the same when it acquired NBC Universal and its family of studios and channels. Verizon went a slightly different route, but it took over Yahoo and AOL and the Huffington Post. All of them want content they can put through their platforms. It is a media aggregation. In this instance, AT&T and Time Warner don't directly compete at the moment, and yet a lot of consumer groups, just as you say, are very concerned about the trend in American business and finance and in media in particular for conglomerations and, a lot of creation and conveyance platforms being concentrated in single hands.
Well, so you've got, for instance, the consumer group of the Free Press, and their president, Craig Aaron, is definitely against the deal and media consolidation in general. And they say having nothing to do with the CNN question. But to the CNN question, there's the political question. Let's listen to the president on the campaign trail in October of 2016 talking about the proposed merger.
As an example of the power structure I'm fighting, AT&T is buying Time Warner and thus CNN, a deal we will not approve in my administration because it's too much concentration of power in the hands of too few.
And David, as you know, other times on the trail, he pretty much said, CNN, we're getting rid of that. I mean, he's said that. And then this past Sunday, you had Kellyanne Conway, the president's spokesperson, and Brian Stelter on his show, Reliable Sources on CNN, getting into a verbal brawl. I think you were in the studio. He asked her whether the president was interfering, punishing CNN. She said that he, Brian, was spreading poison, that the president wasn't. So what is true? Has the president interfered? What does the DOJ say? Can he interfere?
Well, the Justice Department is one of those, because of its involvement in the judicial system, it's one of those departments that's supposed to operate semi-autonomously. The president can appoint certain figures, but he's not supposed to interfere. He sets sort of broad guidelines for what he wants policies to be. In this instance, it's the antitrust division. It's headed by a guy who was the number two in that slot under the George W. Bush administration. People I've talked to respect him as a professional. And yet a year ago, he gave an interview in October 2016 to a Canadian business network in which he basically said people are going to pay a lot of attention to the AT&T Time Warner deal because of the amount of money involved. It's an $85 billion deal, basically, and also because of its profile, because it's media. But basically, he anticipated no antitrust issues for the Department of Justice. Once appointed a few months ago, he started to suggest that there might be concerns. And indeed, it's hard to know. The White House says and the Department of Justice say there was no contact, no improper pressure by the White House that this was decided by career professionals. But, this is almost certainly headed to court. AT&T's CEO, Randall Stephenson, who's supposed to talk later today about some of this stuff, has said that He won't give up CNN or presumably its parent division, Turner Broadcasting, to get this deal done. Turner Broadcasting contributes about 60% of the profits, by my calculation, of Time Warner. So that would be a big blow to the logic of the deal. You know, in court, the Department of Justice would have to present whatever logic it's using to drive this decision. I think this is going to be a really tough one for them to show, given that for the last 40 years, these kinds of deals between non-direct competitors have been kind of waved through, particularly by Republican administrations.
Mm. Okay, so we'll keep an eye on that. But there is another thread to pull in the Harvey Weinstein sexual harassment saga. We had the New Yorker's explosive article about Weinstein, but it also revealed that David Boies, the famous lawyer, helped execute a contract with a private investigation firm that Weinstein hired to block negative articles about him in the New York Times, which is also a Boies client. Now, the New York Times fired Boies' firm. Yikes. You know, walk us through this.
So Boies, you know, is a very high-level litigator. He's presented himself as somebody who likes to fight on behalf of those who may not be able to fight for themselves. Was involved, if I'm not mistaken, in sort of pushing in California for a certain very important gay marriage case that helped ensure the right would be enshrined nationally for gay marriage. And yet here he was, even at a time he was representing the New York Times in some litigation, representing Harvey Weinstein at a time that the movie mogul badly damaged was trying to tooth and nail to prevent stories to appear in the New Yorker and the New York Times. And he said, well, I didn't have a conflict on this because I wasn't representing Weinstein as a lawyer against the Times. I was representing him more generally. But if, you know, what Ronan Farrow so admirably chronicled in the New Yorker with great painstaking care and great precision and some bravery with the sources who came to him, you know, that the private eyes that they hired included people who are gathering dirt on both the sources for the stories that would eventually come out and also the journalists trying to report on Weinstein. And the New York Times, I think, understandably and angrily denounced Boies as unethical in this case and for even being willing to participate in it. The idea that Boies himself gets to say confidentially behind closed doors, I decide when I have a conflict of interest, is untenable. And what he did in this case doesn't seem defensible.
Well, and not to mention that in the broader scope of things, the press has to consider that private investigators might be hiring people to somehow try to block articles. You don't know who you're talking to. I mean, that's chilling right there. But I want to get to the Disney lifting its ban on reporters from the LA Times. The ban was, you know, covering a movie screening. Other film critics said if the LA Times reporters can't go, we don't go. Ultimately, Disney reversed its ban. Why did they do it in the first place?
So the Walt Disney Company was reacting angrily to an investigative series taking a look at the ties between the city of Anaheim and my home terrain of Orange County, California, where Disneyland is based, and concessions given to the Disney Company there for its theme park. Disney says that the LA Times is irresponsible. The story seemed, by most journalists' account, to really have held up rather nicely, been an important watchdog, an accountability check on both local governments and major corporate actor there. Disney said, well, we're no longer going to allow LA Times reviewers to get advanced peeks at Disney films so that they can plan their coverage. And the LA Times said, fine, you know, we may not, you know, be able to review Disney films. And other reviewers stepped forward. And I think there are a couple of interesting lessons here. It ended up in Disney sort of backtracking in a sense. You didn't see that, interestingly, as people have pointed out in Twitter and elsewhere, when Donald Trump's campaign announced it would boycott certain news organizations. Mm-hmm. You didn't see others standing up and saying, I'm Spartacus, you know, rallying in the same way. There was some behind the scenes in that way, but not refusal to talk to Trump during the campaign. Yeah. Another thing to recognize is that although this was successful, it is a sign that major actors in news or entertainment or the corporate world can bypass the press altogether, that they don't have such a deference to the so-called gatekeepers in the media that functioned in the past. They don't necessarily need the LA Times, even though that's the major news organization of Hollywood and California. They don't need it as much as they once did. Right. So they acquiesced. They gave in ultimately, but it's not a Pyrrhic victory, but it's not a complete one either.
And David, we just don't have a half a minute, but you've been reporting on NPR's newsroom leader Michael Oreskes leaving over allegations of sexual harassment. The latest there?
Well, one thing that that is new in recent days is that the CEO of NPR, Yarl Mohn, who's been asking for a chance to rebuild trust and to fix the culture here in the newsroom, has genuinely a heart condition that is requiring him to take at least 4 weeks leave for hypertension. So the newsroom is going to have to function without, for at least a time, yet another senior newsroom leader.
He's been wrestling that for a while. David Folkenflik, thank you.
You bet.